So very bright lights. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to GDC. I hope everyone is having a good, productive conference and already learning a lot in the first couple of hours of the first full day of the conference. A quick show of hands before I get started. How many people here are in audio-related fields? Composers, sound designers, most of the room. Claps for composers and sound designers, of course. And audio implementers. So this talk will have a lot of information that's highly relevant for you. For those of you who are not directly in the realm of audio, I think there will still be good takeaways for you to bring back to your studio about how you can integrate Windows Sonic into your upcoming games for Xbox and for Windows. So you can't have a talk about spatial audio or spatial sound without starting off with what is it and how do we actually define it. I define it as anything that helps tell you where sounds are in the virtual world that the player inhabits, right? Anything that helps tell you this sound is to my right, this sound is above me, this sound is below me, and things like that. And there are two different techniques that are currently used to tell people where sounds are. There's physical, that's actually having a speaker that's positioned there. So if there's a sound that's coming from that position, you can basically, you know, recreate it almost perfectly because it's coming from that speaker. But more commonly, we're doing simulation. We don't have speakers, you know, we don't have a giant crazy array around our player usually. And so we're doing a lot of simulation and a lot of psychoacoustic tricks in order to help sell the player on where sound is originating from. Why is spatial audio important? It helps tell stories more effectively. What does that mean? Number one, it provides immersion. It helps pull the player more into the world than visuals can alone. And visuals can only give you a very restrictive field of vision. And you know, that's generally in the realm of, you know, 50, 60, maybe even 80 or 90 degrees if you want to start getting a little bit motion sick. And audio is what needs to help inform you as to everything else that's going on outside of your field of vision. And this helps provide a lot of anchoring and persistence of objects. It also, it's something that we've rediscovered with virtual and augmented reality, is that, hey, audio can be that mechanism that helps tell you that there's something that you need to pay attention to, there's something that you need to interact with. So instead of having to do all these artificial HUD-type things, which, as various other talks at GDC will cover, are, you know, variously effective, sometimes just having a sound emitting from something that the game wants you to focus on is far more effective and more intuitive. So let's do a quick, brief history of 3D game audio, because we've been talking about 3D sound for games since we've had more than two speakers. Spatial sound in the past has basically meant taking sound emitter positions, because we've always been 3D positioning sounds in games as long as we've had 3D rendering engines, and mapping those to speaker panning. So great, I've got a left speaker, I've got a right speaker. If the sound is perfectly at that position, I will just play it out of that speaker. If it's somewhere in between these two speakers, I will do what this top diagram is, an equal power crossfade between those two speakers so that a sound that's played out of both speakers will roughly sound like it's coming from the center of the room in front of us. And perhaps on top of that, we can apply some psychoacoustic effects. So again, lots of other talks at GDC that go into far more detail on head-related transfer functions, but this is basically the fact that we have ears, we have two ears, and our brains use the difference in signal that arrives at our left ear versus our right ear to help inform us as to where a sound is in 3D space, right? If a sound is over here, it's going to be louder in this ear, it's going to be more filtered in this ear as it sort of bends around my head. It's going to be a little bit delayed in this ear because the speed of sound is fairly slow, and our brains have actually been trained from birth and from our experience to detect that. And we use a bunch of other tricks in games to also sell the concept of distance. Distance-based filtering, distance-based attenuation. So sounds get quieter as they get further away. They get more muffled. You lose some of the high-frequency information in them. Some of the limitations that we've had. So this was the state of the art, you know, for the last 10, 15, maybe even 20 years. Some of the challenges that we've had in the past. Number one, sitting in the living room, there hasn't really been an effective way for me to get any sense of height. I have speakers around me, maybe stereo, maybe 5.1 or even 7.1, but I didn't really have a sense of height. There was no way to sell objects above me. And so every time you had the game with the helicopter, you'd be like, where is that helicopter? I don't really have a good way of detecting that. There also wasn't a ton of existing linear content designed for headphones. So great, I'm going to put on my headphones. I'm still not going to be able to hear a lot of other types of experiences, especially movies and television, that are going to be taking advantage of spatial audio. And all those psychoacoustic effects that I talked about can be pretty processing intensive, especially once you start getting into tens of voices that you're trying to 3D position at the same time. And last but not least, there was very little consumer control and consistency of experiences. So every developer that I worked with who wanted to do some sort of psychoacoustics had to go and license a different solution. They had to work directly with them. They had to train their users, know this game is best experienced with headphones. And there was really not the opportunity for the player of the game to actually interact and, you know, kind of be able to specify, well, here's the kind of a consistent experience that I want across my games, across the other media that I experience on the device as well. So that kind of walks us to the current opportunity, which, number one, the compute power now exists. You know, we continue to see more and more CPU capacity. We actually now have practical audio height solutions. I'll be calling up Michael Jessup in just a few minutes to talk about Dolby's. And they have solutions that work with and without actually having to install speakers in your ceiling, which my wife would be a big fan of. We also have now delivery mechanisms and formats that allow us to actually have spatial content linearly. So now movies are actually able to do what games have been doing forever, and now games can actually start to take advantage of these same avenues so that in real time we can get sounds above and below us as well. Psychoacoustics, ongoing innovations and improvements. Some of what I'll be talking about later is based on the research that we did for the HoloLens project, and making holograms sound like they're real and in the real world with you has led to some nice improvements in our solution, and of course Dolby has a solution for headphones as well. And everyone remembered that, oh yeah, virtual and augmented reality, audio is a thing. Audio is something that we actually need to be presenting to help sell the illusion of VR. Audio is, especially in these early days when sometimes we have, visually we have challenges getting super high fidelity information into the player's device. Sound can mask and solve and actually encompass far more realism than even the visuals can in a lot of cases. We also wanted to integrate with existing audio experiences. So we know that you have a bunch of content today. You don't want to have to go and have everyone go and reauthor it. And we wanted to give the user more control over their experience so they understand and they can opt in or opt out depending on the kind of experience that they actually want to listen to on their device. So with that, I'm super pleased to be able to announce Windows Sonic, which is the audio platform that we have for integrated spatial sound on Xbox and Windows. So this is at the platform level. This is part of the Windows operating system, which the Xbox runs on as well as Windows devices run on as well. It supports both speakers and headphones. So from a content creator's perspective, you'll create your content, you will specify where and how you actually want it to be positioned in 3D space, and you don't even need to worry about if it's being played over speakers versus headphones. You can if you want to. You can check and actually query what the output endpoint is, but you don't need to, and you don't need to reauthor if you don't want to either. Windows Sonic has full support for Dolby Atmos over both speakers and for headphones. Again, MJ will be talking about that more in a few minutes. We also abstract audio objects from the audio output format. So you don't need to have this giant matrix of, okay, I'm listening to Atmos over speakers, and now I need to use a different plugin versus, Windows Sonic over headphones versus other solutions like that. It's all completely abstracted away so that the content creators, the sound designers, and the audio implementers can focus on what they actually want to be focusing on, which is making sound in 3D space. And Windows Sonic takes care of the actual rendering. And Windows Sonic spatial providers can map that rendering to whatever technologies they use. As part of Windows Sonic, we're also introducing virtual surround sound support within the operating system. And that means that existing games can now sound better on headphones. So in the past, on Xbox, your game was being mixed into Glorious 7.1, and then you listen to it on stereo headphones, and we were doing a very naive mathematical downmix, not any virtualization at all. With this solution, you're actually getting virtualization, so you get a virtual 7.1 or 7.1.4 or an 8.1.4.4 sound field all around the user for all of your existing content. So, great, sounds awesome, when can I use it? Today. So it's available in Windows Insider Builds today. You can download at your leisure, after GDC probably. And it will ship to the world so that consumers can actually experience it in the Windows 10 Creators Update, which comes out this spring. And your next question is naturally, well, where can I actually take advantage of this and where can I use it? Everywhere that Microsoft has a platform, we have support. So we have support for Windows Desktop, what's traditionally called Win32, even though most games are 64-bit these days, and the Universal Windows platform, UWP, and then on the Xbox One, both for Xbox Development Kit developers as well as for UWP cross-platform developers as well. We also have broad device support, so like I said before, we support Dolby Atmos in all of its many different flavors. So from HDMI output from your PC or from your Xbox, you can connect to a 7.1.4 receiver, you can connect to a soundbar, you can connect to, in the last few weeks, Dolby Atmos televisions have been announced as well. And so any Atmos supporting device, you'll be able to use from your Windows device, from your Xbox or from your Windows PC. And also any pair of headphones that you currently own via two different formats, via Windows Sonic for headphones, which is based on our HoloLens technology, but retuned for game developers. For HoloLens, we're very focused on trying to make holograms sound real and sound like they're in your real world, so that a lot of times means environmental reverberation, ground and ceiling reflections, and things like that. And we know that in games, the world is wholly virtual, and so you want the sound to sound like it's in that cave or cathedral. And so we've removed a lot of that early reflectivity and made it so that the game can still have full control over where the sound sounds like it's coming from. But also for headphones, we also support Dolby Atmos for headphones as well. And with that, I'd like to call up MJ to come talk a little bit more about Dolby Atmos and Windows Sonic. Come on up, MJ.
Thanks.
Do you want the clicker?
Sure.
There you go.
Cool. How's everyone doing? I'll be quick. I know you guys want to get into how it actually works, and Scott's going to talk about that after I'm done. Quick show of hands, how many people are familiar with Dolby Atmos right now? Okay, good. A lot of you. So this should be pretty easy and quick. So Dolby Atmos originally launched in the cinema back in 2012 with the movie Brave. We partnered with them to do the first movie, and it was a great success. And since then, as you can see, it's been the fastest adopted technology that Dolby's released to date. Now we're in over 2,000 movie screens worldwide, over 600 titles, and we now have over 150 mix facilities that all support mixing and mastering in Dolby Atmos. Recently, we launched 2 years ago in the home theater in 2015. And again, it's like Scott mentioned, it's designed to be much more immersive and scalable and flexible. One of the things that Scott mentioned is that kind of the ubiquity across different platforms, if you will, was not there before, and now we're there with Dolby Atmos. And it's a perfect fit for games. Even though Atmos started in the film industry where it was kind of the opposite, we were taking channel-based mixes and expanding them into objects to give this 3D virtual space. Games have been the opposite of that for many, many years. We've been taking these 3D object environments and having to flatten them down into, you know, before a stereo and now a 5171 experience. And so now we can expand that and you can actually hear games the way they're meant to be played. We launched with Star Wars Battlefront was the first game that was released that supported HDMI output. We followed that up in the spring with Overwatch, which supported headphones. And then most recently, we just launched Battlefield 1, also an HDMI experience. So there's several ways for you to experience Dolby Atmos today in the gaming market, and I encourage everyone to do so. As I mentioned, making Dolby Atmos ubiquitous across multiple platforms. We do have, for home theaters, we have Dolby Atmos-enabled speakers, so you don't have to mount speakers in your ceiling. You can upward fire them and reflect off of your ceiling. We have demonstrations of that. Well, actually, the booth has a full 714 ceiling setup, but we do have various demonstrations in various retailers, you know, throughout all the different Best Buys, et cetera. You can go experience that. In CES last year, 2016, we launched the first soundbars in Dolby Atmos, and now we're bringing it to headphones via gaming. And the benefit you get with an object mix over channel-based mix is that by giving these sounds objects and coordinates, we now have more accurate replayability across a multitude of endpoints. So whether you're on a 714 system or a 512 or a soundbar or even gaming headphones, you get a fairly accurate representation. And so as content creators, that means it's less mixing time for you. You can mix once and it scales across multiple endpoints very graciously. And so how are you going to get this? How am I going to enable Dolby Atmos? on my Xbox, not my Windows machine. Well, that's going to happen via the Dolby Access application. And this is coming very soon to both the Windows Store and the Xbox Store. So you'll be able to download Dolby Atmos Access app that will unlock HDMI for you for free so over with your Windows machines and your Xbox machines. And then you can also purchase Dolby Atmos headphones from within the app. And the benefit, as Scott mentioned, is now, you know, we no longer need expensive, you know, headphones with surround sound built in. If you have Dolby Atmos or even Windows Sonic enabled, you can take any headset you already use and plug it right into your controller and get the full spherical surround sound experience. With inside of Dolby Access, there'll be lots of great stuff. We'll have lots of demos, lots of educational videos, and cinema content, you know, from all of our various film partners as well. You can experience Dolby Atmos. Because it's not just for games. We realize there's a whole slew of cinema and television content and movie content as well. And so all of that content will be compatible with Dolby Atmos on your Xbox and Windows 10 machines. And that's it. I would encourage everyone to please come down to the Dolby booth. Scott's giving a talk. We have Tomas and Scott and Paul from Blizzard giving talks, Martin from Audio Kinetic, Chris Larson from Formosa Group. So all week long here at the show, lots of talks and demonstrations on how plugins and game development works with Dolby Atmos. So I encourage everyone, please come down and swing by the booth. Cool. Thank you.
Thank you very much, MJ. So let's talk about how this actually works, both for consumers and for developers. So I'll start with the consumer experience. This is how things are going to look in Windows 10. We have an update to the Settings app and to the Audio Control Panel on Windows. Sorry, the Audio Settings app on Xbox and the Audio Control Panel on Windows. So on Xbox, you'll notice a bunch of additional options for headset audio. It might be a little bit tiny on these screens, so I apologize for that. But if you are in the Xbox Insider program or the Xbox Preview program, as opposed to the Windows Insider program, you can check this out actually today, I believe. In the Settings app, as a consumer, you'll be able to say, what sort of headset format do I want to listen to? Do I want it to just be glorious stereo, or do I want to use Dolby Atmos for headphones, or again, Windows Sonic for headphones? One thing I wanted to point out here, that third checkbox at the bottom, so MJ said you no longer need to buy an expensive pair of surround headphones. But Scott, I already bought an expensive pair of surround headphones. Do I need to stop using them? No, you don't. That third checkbox allows you to continue to use your surround headphones the way that you want to, if you want to, but you can actually you can uncheck that box, and then even over your surround headphones, you'll be able to get a Dolby Atmos or a Windows headphone, a Windows Sonic for headphones mix. So as I said, we're leaving the control fully in the realm of the consumer, and they can actually choose which format they want to use. Not pictured in that top diagram is also the fact that, obviously, over your HDMI out, now there will be a new option that says Dolby Atmos for over HDMI. Users can opt into virtual surround for all of their existing non-spatial 5.1 and 7.1 experiences. So that means, for example, any linear media that I've been playing in the past in 5.1 or 7.1, listening to over headphones and getting that flat mix down that we've done in the past, will now have the opportunity to opt into, no, instead I'm going to get a more immersive Dolby Atmos for headphones or Windows Sonic for headphones mix. And then on PC, this is actually a big deal. Getting an update into the sound taskbar is pretty huge, and we now actually have a top level checkbox there that says if you're listening to a spatial sound mix, and then within the property page for the speakers, you'll be able to specify which of the options you use. Of course, we do smart things. So if you go into the Dolby app and unlock Dolby Atmos support, we drive you right over here so that you can turn it on very easily as a consumer. One other thing I wanted to emphasize about the platform is that this allows non-spatial and spatial content to run simultaneously. So what do I mean by that? MJ talked about Star Wars Battlefront supporting Dolby Atmos over HDMI on PC. And they actually used precursor technology to Windows Sonic as a platform. And what that meant was they took exclusive access to that audio endpoint, and that was the only thing that could actually present audio. So you could hear Battlefront in glorious Atmos, but you couldn't have a Skype call, you couldn't hear any notifications, toasts, you couldn't have any background music. I know we're audio people in this room and we don't like users listening to their own background music over our games, but you know, as a consumer, I'd rather let them have that control. It was exclusive. You could listen to that and that only. And of course, it would make your switchers, your receiver change modes and everything else like that. That's no longer the case. So with this format, all of your content will actually be mixing together and be presented as a coherent Dolby Atmos stream over HDMI, or as a Dolby Atmos for headphones stream over your headphones. And so everything that you would expect, if I'm playing my game and a Skype call comes in, right now Windows does a nice thing for you and actually ducks the other experiences so you can hear your call. That will continue to work with spatial apps. All right, now let's talk about this for engine developers. How many people here write their own audio engines? Yes, this is a slide for six people in the room. Excellent. Most of you will probably not need to worry about the slide, but I will. I'll cover it for the people who either create audio middleware or have a bespoke in-house audio engine. So the Spatial Audio API exposes an iSpatial Audio client that should sound very familiar to you if you've been writing to a Wasapi endpoint. You have an iAudio client, and the API actually looks very much the same. So we have support for two different kinds of objects. We have a channel bed, which is almost identically what Wasapi had, except now that channel bed actually has awareness of additional channels. So in the past, if you had a 7.1 sound card, Wasapi would say, yep, you've got 7.1. Now, if you have a Dolby Atmos endpoint, we'll say, yep, you've got 7.1.4. If you've got a headphone endpoint, we'll say, yep, you've got 8.1.4.4 of channels of content. So that's the 7.1 channels that you would be familiar with, an eighth channel directly behind you, four channels above and four channels below so that you can get that full immersive experience. So you're getting 360-degree audio around you, but also 360-degree audio above and below you. But then on top of that static, so you could just go with that static bed and say, I'm done. You know, I've got these additional channels. I can get height and depth, height and non-height below the plane information. I don't think that's depth, but you can get all that information. You could say, I'm done. But we also support dynamic objects, and that means, literally, I'm going to have an object with a 3D position, and I'm going to pass that metadata all the way down to the receiver, and the receiver is going to know what to do with that in order to present it based on the speakers that I have in my individual living room. And so we support both of those kinds of object types. You can use, you can mix and match. You can use just one or just the other. And the implementation should again look very similar to what you've done in Wasapi, which is you create these objects, either a channel bed or some dynamic objects or both. You feed them every frame with your audio that's coming out of your engine. You don't need to do anything more than that. And then anytime you want to update your 3D objects, go ahead and update them. And that's pretty much all you need to do. And in the samples that we actually make available, and I'll have a link at the end to those, you'll see that that's pretty much the only difference from what you would have done with iAudio client for Wasapi. And like I said before, that's it. You know, for an engine developer, you don't even need to know, if you don't want to, that the player is listening to speakers versus headphones or Dolby Atmos versus Windows Sonic for headphones. So, gotta have a diagram. It's a GDC talk after all. This is how a Wasapi engine usually works. So game audio is coming in at the top. It might be 7.1 on the Xbox. It's fixed to 7.1 on the PC. It changes based on what the actual sound card supports. And I might have a bunch of other audio clients as well. I've got chat and background music. And you'll notice they're all three Wasapi iAudio clients. First, actually, let me tell you about virtual surround sound, because I mentioned that before. So for any existing game, we're going to now have this. So that you saw that checkbox that said turn on 7.1 virtual surround sound. I think you saw the Xbox one. This is what the PC one looks like in the property page. And when you do that, that means that a game on PC, whereas before it would have only gotten a stereo endpoint, we will now say, no, actually, we understand what to do with 5.1 and 7.1 content. And so a game that had already supported 7.1, if you had a sound card that supported 5.1 or 7.1, this will actually expand the number of people who can hear that mix over headphones to everyone who enables this. And so now your 7.1 mix will be virtual surround sounded. I'm totally making that a verb. And then that will be mixed with, and your chat and your background music don't need to be VSS'd because they're already mono stereo, and we would assume that stereo content is already pretty well designed for to be heard over binaural speakers, and we don't want to VSS that. So that would just be summed in with the output, and voila, that's sent out to your headphones. Okay, now let's get back to new games. So that's your existing game Nothing you need to do there. The user has ticked a new checkbox, and your game that was already creating a 5-1 or 7-1 mix sounds better over headphones because it doesn't have to be forced to be only going over a naive stereo path. Okay, so again, typical Wasapi implementation. What do we do to actually turn this into a spatial audio implementation? That's all we have to do. Is instead of an iAudio client, we're using an iSpatial audio client. We can present it the exact same channel bed. If we wanted to, we could even just keep 7.1 and call it a day and be spatial. But you know, we're doing a spatial sound output, so let's take advantage of the additional 4 height speakers, for example, for Atmos. And that, again, gets mixed in with everything else, and then it's presented to the speakers, which I made kind of into almost a happy face there, but that's fine. Or also being downmixed for Dolby Atmos for headphones, or again, Windows Sonic for headphones as well. So that's the most basic implementation for you as either an audio middleware developer or for a bespoke audio engine. It would be changing iAudio client to iSpatial audio client. And now you're aware of the fact that there's 7.1.4 channels, and it's up to you to figure out how you want to fill those channels, whether it's linear content or 3D position content. It's the control is yours. But on top of that, if you want to, you can also feed mono stems with 3D positional data. So you can say, I want sound to come from this position in space. Exactly. I don't care if there's an actual speaker channel there in my channel bed. And I want it to be able to move around and things like that. And so we support dynamic objects as well. And I'll talk about the numbers a little bit later on in the deck. And so you would then create these dynamic objects, you pass those through, those go through through the system mix basically opaquely. The system doesn't have anything that it can actually do with a dynamic object other than present it onto the receiver or present it onto the headphone encoder technology that's being used. And that then would, again, be mixed with the 7.1.4. So with that, let me show a quick example. It's going to sound fabulous because this is going to be the headphone example being played over speakers in Moscone in a giant echo chamber of a conference room. But just to prove to you that the technology is real, I will go ahead and fire up. So we have 3 different examples that we actually are shipping right now. We have a simple spatial dynamic sound sample where we just take a sound, and it's the classic helicopter demo, except we actually got some nice drum tracks by my coworker Mark, who's not actually here right now. And it's you 3D position them around the listener, and you can hear over headphones, ooh, it sounds like it's going around me, and you can make it go up and down, ooh, it sounds like it's going above me and below me. I'd encourage you to come check that out at either the Dolby booth or at the Microsoft lobby bar at high noon right after this talk. Hopefully I'll finish a little bit early so that we can all head over there and check it out in person. So that's one of the demos, which is just a basic dynamic object demo. So it's one sound, you 3D position, and of course you could spawn a bunch of those. We have a channel-based demo where we have a 7.1.4 pre-rendered mix that we've created, and we just present that to the channel bed and say, hey, now we've got 7.1.4. And then we've got an advanced sample that mixes and matches between the two of those. So that's the one that I'm going to play right now. So you're going to hear a 7.1.4 rainstorm. And let me see if I can drag it over to that screen so you can see it. There we are. And so right now we're just playing a 7.1.4 bed. It probably sounds fabulous over these stereo speakers. You can just hear all the spatialization, but in an actual listening environment, whether it's a soundbar or headphones or a 7.1.4 system, you would actually hear the rain coming down from above, the thunder in the distance, everything else like that. Now I can start to pile some dynamic objects on top of that. Maybe, I haven't lost focus. Let's see here. There we go. And that was a very quiet one. There's a more obvious one. And you can see how you can create a giant crazy forest, which again sounds fabulous in here, but please use your imagination and download these samples and try them out on your own PCs with headphones, and you'll get a far better experience than that. Nothing says dev sample like a lot of looping sounds. Okay, so that's the advanced spatial sound sample. Again, you can check it out and you can and download it. I'll have a link at the very end of the talk to a URL that you can pull it down from, as well as the other 2 samples that I talked about. But Scott, I really want the mix to sound different based on whether we're on speakers or headphones or based on the actual format that I'm using. Well, you can. You can actually query the current output and you can detect and have a notification that fires when you change from headphones to speakers, from Dolby Atmos for headphones to Windows Sonic for headphones. And you can actually make your content or your entire game engine pivot on that information if you want to. The point I want to emphasize is you don't have to. And you don't need to make any runtime changes. And your game, that sample that I was running, you can actually be toggling between the two different formats, and the sample knows nothing about it, and it continues to render, and it just snaps between Windows Sonic for headphones and Dolby Atmos for headphones transparently. There's nothing that the game needs to do there. And there's also no requirement to reauthor and remix content. Specific to Windows Sonic for headphones and Dolby Atmos for headphones, we've been working very closely with Dolby to make sure that the mixes are reasonably well balanced between the two output formats. Another thing to keep in mind, games don't need to perform any license checks. So if the user has flipped on Dolby Atmos because they've gone and gotten the Dolby Access app, the game doesn't need to even know about that. They don't need to be, you know, checking to see, is it okay for the user to be listening in format A or format B? It's completely, again, transparent. In the scenario where spatial audio is disabled or isn't available, Windows Sonic does gracefully downmix to non-spatial output formats. So you're like, when is that ever going to happen? Well, if I'm running on an older version of Windows, for example, I'm probably going to want to gracefully degrade. If the user has explicitly opted out, say, for example, they have that professional surround sound set of headphones that they want to continue to listen to their game in, we will say, nope, sorry, the user has turned off spatial output. And so we will, again, gracefully make that static bed, so the 8.1.4.4 that we support up to for the static bed, we will go ahead and downmix that to the actual output that they have, whether that's 7.1, 5.1, stereo, binaural headphones, things like that. And then those dynamic objects that I was talking about before, that's always dynamic. So you never know how many you're actually going to get. It varies based on the format. It varies based on the capabilities of your PC. And so if spatial is actually disabled, we'll just say, sorry, you have zero dynamic objects that are actually available to you right now. And so games would already have to have logic in place in order to say, all right, great, push all that into the channel bed, which is what most of them do already. And by the way, for the plugins that we've helped create with middleware, and I'll be getting to that a little bit later on, we've made sure that this is already the current behavior. So if you use the Windows Sonic plugins, we already do the right thing and do a graceful downmix if the user says they don't support, they don't want to support spatial sound output. Okay, that was everything focused on people who create middleware engines and create, I said I had one slide and that was like six slides, I'm sorry about that. Slash thank you, slash you're welcome to the people who actually create middleware engines and have a bespoke audio engineering engine. So you're gonna use the spatial audio API directly if that's the solution that you want. If you're using audio middleware, hey, guess what? We've already been working with audio middleware to make sure that we have DSP plugins that expose this today. And they're available today. You can come check them out. We'll be having a couple of demos of them at the Dolby booth later on tomorrow, and I'll have the schedule at the very end there as well. But please go to your favorite audio middleware vendor and talk with them, and the API is public, and we've been working with a number of them, and we'd love to continue to work with more of them. So I'm going to use the plugin because I'm using audio middleware. How many people here use audio middleware for their games? Okay, so about half of the people in the room. Okay, so lots of other people do not use audio middleware or are using bespoke engines. But for people who use middleware, and even if you're creating a bespoke solution, you'll probably want to use one of these kinds of patterns for how you expose this to your content creators. There's three different options that I'll walk through. So another diagram. Here's our typical game signal flow. So now this is from the game perspective. This is kind of to the left of that other diagram that I showed before, where everything is getting mastered by the game. And in this example, it's being mastered for 7.1 because it's an Xbox One title. And I've got music, which is, for example, 5.1. I've got my dialogue and my Foley. And you can't have a sound talk without footsteps. So there you go. I've got my shoe in there. And so we've got our mono sounds. And you'll notice that today, because we're focused on a 7.1 mastering mix, most middleware panners actually are optimized for 7.1. That's the format that they actually focus on for 3D positioning. So you 3D position a sound, it says, okay, great, that means the left back speaker at minus 3 dB plus the right back speaker at minus 6 dB equals somewhere in between the two of them. So the first way that you might plug in Windows Sonic, which is the way that we've actually found is the least invasive and the quickest way for people to get up and running, is just say, hey, that 7.1.4 master that I was using before, that's now 7.1.4. So now I'm mastering to 7.1.4, and the only update you need to make in your content is actually say, hey, I want to use a 7.1.4 panner. So you need to implement a new panner that's, because the game has already been passing around X, Y, Z coordinates for all the sounds in the game. The Z was just basically kind of meaningless other than maybe for distance-based attenuation. But now you can say, haha, now I've actually got height and depth. And so I can actually take that Z and use that to pan into up to an 8.1.4.4. This is an example of I'm focused on making my game sound great over Dolby Atmos for speakers, and you could just say I'm going to pan to 7.1.4. And so any place that you had a panner before, that panner becomes 7.1.4. These are usually global settings in most of the audio middleware solutions that are out there. And now I'm creating a 7.1.4 master. And as we saw in that earlier slide, Windows Sonic takes care of mixing that out for HDMI using Dolby Atmos, or for headphones using a Windows Sonic spatial provider. You'll notice the other thing we were doing here before is we had a linear downmix, which means we were just doing naive math on the 7.1 mix to get it down to headphones. And now we can actually do a Windows Sonic mix that will actually virtualize that 7.1.4, or again, up to 8.1.4.4, plus all the dynamic objects, which I'll get to in a minute. So that's the least invasive way to add this to your system. So it's basically, as you'll see in middleware options, in middleware offerings, it's basically a globally adjustable option. But you might say, hey, I've got some content that's pristine and I really didn't want to mess with it and I don't want it to be spatialized, I don't want it to be VSS'd over headphones. That's kind of the biggest scenario that we've seen, is I've got, you know, say 5.1 or maybe stereo music that I want to just hear unaffected, played over headphones. So in this case, rather than having a mastering voice or a mastering bus that's in 7.1.4, now I'm having a submix that's in 7.1.4. And the thing to keep in mind with this solution, so you'll notice nothing changed on my dialogue or my Foley, but my music now is coming all the way through the system, and it's just going to be presented intact. We can still mix together with non-spatial endpoints. So this is basically saying, my music is going to use a Wasapi endpoint, and my dialogue and sound effects are going to use a Windows Sonic endpoint. And the only thing to keep in mind here is that that submix is now opaque from the mastering mix. So the two of them can't really communicate. They kind of are their output buses, both effectively. And so if you had a sidechain compressor, for example, that you wanted the dialogue to be driving the music, you need to make sure to fork that off before you got to the mastering mix for your dialogue or for your Foley. But still not a huge burden there. Okay, now let's get into the more interesting scenario of dynamic objects. And we've seen that most titles are actually doing the very first one that I talked about, which is a 7.1.4 mastering voice. But some of them are saying, on top of that, I have some hero sounds. I've got that helicopter, and it's going to move around overhead, and I want that to be accurately positioned at all times, so I'm going to use a dynamic object for that. And maybe I've got some dialogue that I want to be positioning, following the player as they move around me in 3D space, and I don't feel like I get enough fidelity with a 7.1.4 mix. In this case, you can use dynamic objects. And again, the thing to keep in mind here is, as soon as you say this is a dynamic object and send it off to Windows Sonic, it again becomes opaque to the rest of the mix. So you're basically saying this mono sound and these 3D coordinates are going to go out of the console or out of the PC into the receiver, and the receiver is going to figure out where to position that and how to blend it with all the other sounds. And so again, now you get into the question of, well, if I wanted to be doing, you know, a coherent mix, this becomes an extra challenge that I need to keep in mind. But for one or two, or you know, a small handful of hero sounds, it's a good choice that a lot of studios have actually been checking out. One other thing to keep in mind is that sounds can be co-located. So dynamic object does not need to be one mono wave file. Dynamic object is one point in 3D space. But there's nothing that says, hey, the guy who's talking to me is like, you know, 3 meters away. I think it's okay if his footsteps and his dialogue are coalesced into one 3D position. Now, obviously, the specific scenarios will vary, and sometimes that makes sense and sometimes it doesn't. But co-location is something that a lot of developers are using as well, and that's both to manage voice count, but also to manage sort of intelligibility of the mix, because as you heard in that forest example, you know, only having five or six objects moving around the user was already pretty chaotic. You could think about getting into tens or even a larger number, it can start to get pretty crazy. And so by design, just to keep some sanity in your mix, a lot of studios are saying, nope, 3D position, I'm going to mix a bunch of different sounds into that and position that in 3D space as one dynamic object. And this kind of goes into, this kind of summarizes what I just talked about with those three different techniques. So I talked about 7.1, migrating from that to a 7.1.4 mix is kind of the easiest way and the least disruptive. And it means that the full game mix is spatialized over headphones, both for better and potentially for worse, if you didn't like how your how stereo music would be virtualized. 7.1 to 7.1.4 submix voices is a solution, particularly for that binaural music scenario where I want the music to just be played the way that it was authored. But again, keep in mind that now the music, whatever you were to send non-spatially, is not going to be is not going to be able to interact with what you're doing spatially. They'll still mix together, and you'll still hear them at output, but they won't be aware of each other in the mix. And then the third way being dynamic sound objects that I can 3D position. That gives you the most detailed and accurate positioning, especially for sounds that are tracking in space. That said, a lot of games have found that 7.1.4 or 8.1.4.4 is perfectly fine. You can still do interspeaker panning, so it's not like I only have those 12 positions. I can still emulate positions between those 2 points in space. And you can use hybrid approaches between all of these as well. Okay, let's get to the meat of things. CPU, how much does this cost? This sounds awesome. I'm going to do my next game if it's free. Okay, good. It's on Xbox, it's free. On the Xbox console, encoding, real-time encoding for Dolby Atmos and for Windows Sonic for headphones is performed in the hardware, so it's, there's no cost for the game to actually use it. On PC, the CPU varies based on your PC, like everything else related to Windows development, and the available voices will also scale based on the specific format. So as you'll see from this table, Dolby Atmos has a fixed limit of 32 voices over HDMI, therefore that's the number of maximum objects in Windows on software. For Windows Sonic for headphones, you can see that you can go crazy in software, but you're also going to be going probably a bit crazier with CPU if you go up to 112 unique dynamic objects, plus all the cacophony that would go along with that. So over HDMI output, the channel bed will be 7.1.4, which is 12 channels. I've got a little asterisk next to Windows Sonic for headphones because 8 plus 1 plus 4 plus 4 does not equal 16. Last time I checked, it equals 17. And the reason why there's an asterisk is that we actually don't 3D position the LFE. We do some different processing, and that's a lot cheaper than actually doing a full 3D position. But we have the other 8 channels around the player, as well as, again, the 4 height and the 4 depth channels. One thing to keep in mind is I just said that it's free. It's not free. Of course nothing's free. You have to create your content to use spatial sound. And one of the things that you might do is say, I want my cutscenes to now be in glorious 7.1.4. Well, guess what? That means that your content might be a bit larger. Now, in the worst case, which would be if all of your cutscenes were linear PCM, that would be 50% larger. Luckily, most of us use formats that are kind of already aware that sometimes you have well-correlated information between the various channels, and they do great compression for stereo, let alone 5.1 or 7.1 or 7.1.4. So 50% is kind of unrealistic, but keep in mind that versus a 7.1 mix, a 7.1.4 pre-rendered cutscene is probably going to be a little bit bigger. So you might have some storage or just bandwidth issues to contend with there. The other CPU thing to keep in mind is DSP costs. So I talked before about how especially if you do the second or the third options, now you've got several different, effectively, submixes that are going out to the receiver. So if I had a reverb and I wanted that reverb to be on each of my dynamic objects, guess what? I need to have an instance per dynamic object. That's crazy talk. No one's going to do that. So instead, you're going to take the dynamic object and also pipe it into the main mix to get the wet, and then you'll just do the dynamic object for the dry. But you need to keep this in mind. And hey, guess what? We also don't have a ton of real-time effects right now that are 7.1.4 aware. As you start to ramp up on those, odds are they'll probably cost a bit more CPU time than a stereo effect or than a quad or a 5.1 effect. Those are just the things to keep in mind as you start creating spatial sound content. One other thing I wanted to cover here, because it might not have been obvious before, is that WindowSonic is focused on solving for sound positioning simulation. There are so many other techniques that we use to sell the idea of sound location in a game. And we were never going to have a solution that solved all of the different ways that games implement occlusion and obstruction or distance-based filtering or even distance curves in general and how sounds get more attenuated with distance, right? Because every game has a different set of units. I've seen games that have used kilometers for what was effectively inches, and just because there was a hack early on and we're never touching that constant again, but deal with it, kilometers equals inches. And so we don't want to solve for that. So we solve for 3D position, but you continue to use all of the other plugins and all of the other runtime parameter controls and sliders that you use today to determine and dictate how sounds respond to distance and space. That was one thing that I wanted to reemphasize there. Considerations for sound design for using spatial sound. I talked a little bit about dynamic object limits, and you'll notice that in that table we were capping at 32 voices, and you might say, 32? That sounds like my game's 100, 200 voices. I can't deal with that. The thing to keep in mind is that it was 32 virtual channels. That's 32 channels of content. So 7.1, we've already been forcing ourselves to 8 channels. Now we basically have 4 times that many to deal with. 7.1.4 plus, again, like I said, hero elements that I want to have dynamically positioned. So continue to use the same strategies. If you're still finding that, no, I really need that 33rd voice, be thinking about things, all the things that we've had to do in the past in terms of prioritization and culling and cutting off the quietest or the earliest played sound and things like that. And leverage the channel bed as well. You don't need to cut it off dead. You can say, nope, I'm out of voices. Now resend this voice back over to the spatial channel bed. So it's not going to be as well 3D positioned maybe as my individual dynamic object, but I'm still going to continue to hear it. Limit the number of dynamic objects for mixed clarity. I think you heard that even from that sample that I just played. Low frequency content and pure tones don't tend to localize well. That's one of the reasons why sirens pitch up and down, so that you can actually hear them and localize them as they come towards you and go away from you. Especially for height channels, try and limit the number of sounds. Like, try and create a coherent mix. Is basically the guidance there. The things that we already know and do. Be aware of typical psychoacoustical locales of confusion. So on the plane that cuts my head in half, there's a whole bunch of different areas that can sound pretty much like it's somewhere above or behind me. I don't really know. And so tricks that games have been using today that continue to make perfect sense with WindowSonic is bias those a little bit to the left or to the right, or be okay with. Be aware and be okay with that level of potential inaccuracy as people are actually listening to the game in those formats. I want to do spatial sound today or tomorrow or maybe next Monday when I come back from GDC. What do I need to do? For headphones, you don't have to do anything. Plug in the headphones that you have today, any stereo output. Use your favorite headphones. As I talked about before, if you have a pair of prosumer headphones that already does 5.1 or 7.1, you can still use those. If you have crummy earbuds, you can use those. In fact, over at the Microsoft booth, you can bring your own headphones and listen to it if you have a pair of headphones with you, as many sound people actually do carry with them. If not, take a listen when you get back to your office. For speakers, there's a little bit more work. Make sure your PC supports HDMI audio output. Yes, MiniDP does generally. Check your PC or your laptop, but DisplayPort does generally count as HDMI 1.4. And then Dolby has a number of resources. Go by their booth or visit their website. I'll have the URL in a few minutes. That can give you more guidance about building a reference monitoring and listening environment. So you'll want to get a capable receiver that understands and can actually emit height channels. You can get ceiling-mounted or up-firing speakers or a soundbar in order to actually implement that. Okay, I'm sold, but now my QA department is going to kill me because I'm saying, yeah, you need to play the game. First of all, I already had to fight with them to even play the game with headphones, and now you're saying they have to try the game with a whole bunch of different settings. No, we're actually finding most games are actually using the same sorts of matrices that they were using before. And what they're doing is they're taking their high-end mix, which was their 5.1 or 7.1, and instead replacing that with a consumer Dolby Atmos system or something that gives them that height information. Then, as Kames continued to do today, listen, do a sanity check over stereo, so listen to it over glorious television speakers or, you know, a poor set of theater-in-the-box speakers, and then listen over headphones as well, especially if you're going to be doing things that have some spatial accuracy that you want to be part of gameplay. And so that's not actually that much different than what games are already doing today, with a heavy emphasis on headphone mixes. And the headphone mix, we think you can just do a hot swap. So where can I actually hear this? Well, as I've been talking about this entire talk, you can hear it today on your own PC. You can join the Windows Insider program. We've got samples. I'll have the sample slide in just a minute. We've got documentation available on the Microsoft Developer Network, so you can actually look at the API in more detail that I walk through. Dolby has a number of support resources as well on their website. That's how you get access, early access to the Dolby Access app. Yes, as well as a white paper. There's some sample code coming soon. There's a logoing program. They have linear cinema tools for your favorite DAW so that you can actually be authoring in 7.1.4 for your cutscenes like we talked about. And then here at GDC, there's at least two different ways that you can hear Windows Sonic. So number one, tomorrow, 10:30 to 11:30, I will be giving a talk along with my counterpart, Mark Yend. He'll be focused more on sort of the content integration and implementation aspects of Dolby Atmos and Windows Sonic for headphones and the Windows Sonic architecture overall. And that'll be in Dolby's booth on Moscone South 1632. And then also right after this talk, so that's in about 8 minutes, you can jog over to Moscone South in the upper level and hear Windows Sonic at the Microsoft Lobby Bar. And that's today from 12 to 1. Or you can grab me at any time throughout the week and I can show you a demo as well. With that, I think we're done. So we've got a vanity URL set up with the samples. Unfortunately, capitalization does not seem to work with aka.ms links, so sadly it is GDC Windows Sonic. But aka.ms/GDC Windows Sonic is a way to get access to all the samples, the three samples that I talked about, as well as a bunch of other samples that we've developed. I think I also set up GDC Windows Sonic docs as a link to the documentation, so you can jump right over to the docs on MSDN as well.